I mean, I can always record it with QuickTime with onboard audio. That just takes a shit ton of space.
Yeah.
Try this again. All right, annual recording. There we go. Dun, dun, dun. We really got to spring for some sound effects at some point. So welcome, audience, to Mention and Dispatches. And, okay, which one of y'all is echoing? Somebody's echoing.
Hello?
Nope, not echoing now. All right, so dispense with the echo. We'll introduce the panel tonight. Martok is back. Sam, how are you doing?
Good, Brant.
Excellent. And back for the second or third time this season, Ian is here, Mr. Rocky Mountain Navy himself. Howdy, Ian.
Hey, Brant. Hey, everybody.
And so, look, at this point, we've given up trying to not just count the episodes, but even predict what order they're coming in, because we got out of sequence when we hurried to get the one about the Charlies out. As of today, we don't have any hate mail from it yet, but there's a yet in all of that.
There's still time.
Yeah, there's plenty. Are you kidding? There's a whole year. And I don't know that the joke will have died down yet by the time this goes live. So if you have not yet signed the petition for Aardwolf to record a rap video, it is linked to this podcast episode. Please go sign the petition that Aardwolf should have to record us a rap video, as he threatened to do so on his live stream coming home from Compass Expo.
Yes.
With all of that said, tonight's topic was inspired by Twitter thread that, Ian, I think you chimed in. I don't think you started. I think somebody pinged you as one of several people on the Twitter thread about sources of wargaming news and places you get your news, the kinds of things you look for, the kinds of things you definitely hit versus kind of sort of hit. And you had done a pretty good explanation on your Twitter thread on your reply as to what you filter through, how you get it, where you get it, that kind of thing. And so I thought we'd lead off with you talking a little bit about some of what you explained in that Twitter thread, maybe expand on that a little, because we're not limited to tweet length answers here. So talk to us some about your wargaming news.
So, I mean, for wargaming news, I tend to be a mix of call it the new social media and a bit of the old classic social media. I'm big on Twitter, but I try to filter through the dumpster fire as much as I can. So I found that Twitter works pretty good for getting the information to the customers. I sign up with many of the different game companies, and I look forward to them pushing out their information. Some game companies are not on Twitter. So for those guys, those organizations, I'll go off and I'll try to find their website. Many of them have a way to sign up for some news. So then I get pushed that into my email feed and try to go from there. But I mean, really, honestly, probably the best way is just the other users on other fellow wargamers on Twitter who hear about something and push it out. I find the Twitter works much better than like a BGG forum or sorry, Brant, even the Armchair Dragoons forum, because it's something that I have to go log into. You have to go pull it up, you have to sort through the list, whereas the Twitter feed sort of push it to you. That said, I also have a pretty strict SOP of how I filter my Twitter. I don't follow everybody. Sometimes they end up on a list and I have to go pull up that list like once a day when I'm like traveling on my commute, doing things like that. But for the most part, I found that nowadays the going and getting it through your Twitter feed, having it pushed to you and having those companies push out information to you is by far the best way that I get my information. How about you?
That's a multifaceted answer, I guess, is the way to say it there.
I was just going to say, so your Tuesday news day is sort of a mix of the old and the new approaches. So how do you think about that?
Yeah. For Tuesday news day, I have the shell template built 2 and 3 months out. I go ahead and build those templates and get them in place so that as I get closer each Tuesday, I've already got the shell in place and can be adding things. So throughout the week, as I see something pop up that I think, hey, we've got to make sure we get that included, I'll go ahead and pull up the draft of that release and go ahead and add things in there. Even if all I do is paste in the link and I'm going to go back and write the text later, I just don't want to lose track of the links and have to go chase them down at another time. So that's one big thing that I'll keep up with throughout the day or throughout the week. I am, through my Armchair Dragoons email, I'm subscribed to a half dozen or more company newsletters. I don't think they're doing it intentionally, but sometimes it feels like GMT waits until I send out a Tuesday Newsday, and then they will send out their monthly update. It's almost exactly. Like they do it to us on purpose. And I'm pretty sure Gene and Tony and those guys are not doing that, but there are days where it sort of feels like that. So I've got regular newsletter subscriptions for Compass, GMT, Avalanche, a couple of the computer ones. So I'm on the John Tiller release list. I'm on the Slytherin press release list. And some of those are just kind of fire and forget, right? We're just going to blast info on occasion and you get what we send you. Some of them are a lot more interactive in their email lists of, hey, we've got this, because they know we're a media outlet. We've got this. So if you want a review code or if you need some press support, contact us for information about things. And that's always appreciated. I am not signed up for as many newsletters as I could be. In part, some of those I've unsubscribed because they were fairly repetitive. They were sending stuff out once a week, but of the 10 items in there, only one or two were new on any given week. And there was a lot of repetition. I understand why people do that. In case you missed it the previous week, you've still got another week or two that they can get it to you. So I have a handful of newsletters, but the core of me building Tuesday Newsday, this is going to sound bat crap crazy to folks. I have a folder in my favorites toolbar on my browser that's got 85, 90 different links in it. And I will just one click open that whole thing into separate tabs. And that pops everything up. And then I just sit there and I go through every tab. Hey, what's new this week? What's new this week? And there are times where I've got 40 odd publishers that will show up in that list. And maybe five of them have something new this week. And I'll recognize that because I'm seeing these things literally every week. So I'll know, oh yeah, that's new. That wasn't there last week. Whether they've marked it as new or not, not all of them remember to do that. But the thing is, out of those 75, 80 different publishers and creators, you don't know which five or six are going to have something new on any given week. So you got to open them all and go check them out. And that can take a little time. That's just the publishers. I do keep an eye on what some of the other media sites are saying. I do have a handful of forums that I load just to take a look at what some of them are saying. I do load some other content creators because we have a handful of content partners that we will make sure to highlight in there. Ian, you're one of them. So we will pull stuff in from Mo and from Gary. And you know, that's down. That's one of our headers, is something from our partners. So I'll make sure we hit those sites and grab what's new from those. We've got our own archives that we highlight with some of the videos there. But I also take a look at, I'll keep an eye on Twitter like you do. And I also keep an eye on some of the professional wargaming community, because that is an area that we try to service. And so in addition to a lot of the hobby game sites that pop up, I'm keeping an eye on the things that PaxSims is sharing and Georgetown University Wargaming Society, UK Fight Club, and now US Fight Club. I'm also keeping an eye on some of the professional military news sources that aren't just wargame stuff, but we'll occasionally talk wargaming. So places like Breaking Defense and War on the Rocks and Foreign Policy and a couple of those. I've got a couple of writers on Forbes that I follow. Not necessarily that Forbes is the be-all and end-all of digital news, but it's an easy place for those writers to bounce you to other things as well. I've got a handful of pre-configured Kickstarter pages that I load with some pre-configured searches to keep an eye on what's been newly launched. And I'm trying to think, you know, the periodicals kind of count with the publishers, so I'm keeping an eye on what the magazines are doing. S&T Press has something new on sale every week, has a new back issue that they're doing at about a 50% off. So every week, hey, this is this week's sale over at S&T Press. Paradox changes the stuff they put on sale every week, which they do all the time. So I know that's a lot, but when I'm intentionally hunting news, you got to go through a lot of places to find those things.
Yes.
keeps you pretty busy. And then, you know, I do get some help with Tuesday Newsday, as folks will see something, they'll throw it at me and go, hey, you ought to mention this. I get stuff sent to me through Discord, through Twitter. Sam is actually the one populating the 4X part of that newsletter now. So he sends over each week a couple of bullets for here's what's new in the 4X gaming world. So I'm going to let him talk a little bit more about that. That's probably overkill for what you were looking for you know, how I populate that. But it you know, there's a lot to it because it is a little time consuming, but we try to be, I don't want to say we're trying to be perfect, but we're trying to be comprehensive. We're trying to cover a lot of ground in there.
Yeah.
So that's what I try doing. So. Sam, what are you looking at for those 4X sources, some of those 4X sites where you're pulling things from?
Well, I finally just recently started hopping back on Twitter. I actually have an account there again. And it's proving to, or it's always kind of been a source for, like, if you're willing to do a deep enough dive, you can find some interesting stuff on there. And there's some people and some webs and sites that I follow that I know that if I follow them that, you know, you'll come across the good, useful informational, good nugget of information. And then there, of course, there are sites like, you know, a big one is Explorminate, both in their forums and increasingly, especially the last year or so on their Discord, come across all sorts of good information and news there. Kind of like you, Brandt, I actually have a folder. Well, in a way, two folders. I have one folder for gaming, which has like a bunch of different websites that I check out, not necessarily every day, but probably about some I know to check. I know I should check once a week. Others know. I can probably just check like once a month, depending on what kind of content they're putting out. And then I have a separate folder with websites just solely for 4X and Grand Strategy games. And those I tend to check a little bit more often. And just going through and seeing what's there. And some of those websites, it's actually like some guys just have like a gaming blog. And I come across, mm-hmm. you know, some interesting little pieces there. I tend to focus more on the 4X computer games, but every once in a while I'll discover more like, you know, the board game tabletop 4X games as well, which is always nice when I can complement that.
You've been a Twilight Imperium fan for a long time.
Just a little bit.
Yeah.
No, you see, you bring up a great point because when Brent asked me, hey, you know, where do you get your war game news? I went through a couple different definitions. And Brent, we're not going to visit the definition of a war game again.
No, God no.
But no. So there's news. Okay, war game news. So war game news is everything from, hey, here's a new game that's been released. Here's a designer who's talking about playtesting a game, a concept of a game. Here's a content creator reviewing a game. Here is a professional war gaming organization talking about using wargaming in some sort of teaching or something like that. So it does require a pretty wide net, and it requires a really sort of some self-discipline too as you're going through all this stuff, because I mean, sorry Brian, I can't possibly open it. I don't think I have a computer that can handle 85 tabs being open at once to begin with, and then sorting through it, my god, I mean, I need to have something that gives me a little bit more. I want the news, but I also need to filter a lot of the chaff out of it, which means that you start looking for some of the key content creators, which then brings up the idea of how are they getting it to you?
Yeah.
Everything nowadays, I mean, I've gone from web pages to Twitter, so I'm still a Luddite in many ways. So many other folks have gone to a video. I mean, Aardwolf, wonderful, wonderful show. I love it, but I don't have 2 hours every Monday night to sit down. So I got to try to catch snippets of it later.
Right.
Compass Games does a great, great show every week. And there's a lot of information that they bring on designers, developers, what's in the process. You get to see, you get a sense of what's coming. Of course, nobody's production timeline is ever what you want. It's not ever fast enough. But I got to filter through that. And I'm not sure that that's really helping the community right now. You go into these long form pieces. I mean, You sit right in my wheelhouse with trying to keep this to about an hour. It means I can do it on my commute in one day back and forth to work.
Yeah.
Some of these other things that are going for 2-3 hours, I can't do that 2-3 days of time. So we got to filter and get the information, which means it's up to the publishers and designers to feed that to us in bite-sized bits to get us interested to go dig deeper.
Yeah. Yeah, I will tell you. So a trick that I stumbled across almost a little bit. You mentioned Gary's Monday night stream. I don't hit the Compass stream on Thursday night very often, because if there is something that's really cool, somebody's going to tell me about it, and I'll go find that snippet of it. Gary's is intentionally structured more as a conversation than as any sort of announcement or like newscast kind of thing. But that's the shtick he's going for. That's what he's trying to do. And that's cool. Like that's what he wanted to be. And, although I'm not really sure that's what he wanted to be. That's what he ended up with. Just kind of, it evolved into that. I tend to catch anywhere from 20 to 40 minutes of Gary's show live on most Monday nights, just because there's other things going on with the family here. That said, last night I happened to be, watching the show a little longer. What I'll tend to do is I'll catch as much of Gary's show as I can live, chime in a little bit in the chat here and there. And then the next morning, while I'm putting the finishing touches on Tuesday Newsday, I'll pull his live stream up from the night before and I'll listen on about 1.5 speed. Now, what I don't get by the next morning is the comments haven't, the chat hasn't fully rendered to where you can follow the chat along. So there's a lot of times where Gary's reacting to something in the chat and I can't see what that says because that hasn't rendered yet. But you can get, especially skipping through the 20 to 40 minutes that I caught the night before, I tend to get most of Gary's show down to an hour or a little less by speeding it up. And I found that I can do up to about 1.4, 1.5 speed and still retain what they're actually saying. I can still sort of pay attention to what's going on. Anything faster than that, and I'm not catching enough of it to follow. And so I'll sometimes do that. You know, Mo's got his monthly Whiskey Charlie show. Then again, it's a couple of dudes hanging out, having a good time talking war games. Sometimes they're interviewing folks. Sometimes they're just having a conversation. I can put Whiskey Charlie on at about 1.5x speed. One of the handy things about Whiskey Charlie is even though they've got multiple voices on there, they've all got distinct accents. So even sped up, it's easy to pick out who's who. Kev's got a very distinct voice. Mo's got a very distinct voice. So I don't even have to be watching them on the screen. I can have them on the side screen and be listening and catch 80% or more of what they're saying. So that's one thing that I've tried to do to help speed up the absorption of and speed up that content. But you're right, you know, the shift to video has made it a little tougher to find which 5 minutes in the 90-minute broadcast actually matter for something new as opposed to a more generalized conversation. That is a challenge.
Yeah.
So Sam, you watch a lot of the videos with the different 4X announcements and some of the other publisher announcements. What's it like trying to weed through some of those things to pull out some of the key pieces that you're looking for?
To be honest, I'm just using the arrow buttons, like, you know, fast forwarding through like, you know, 5-10 seconds at a time. Like, okay, this is, you know, and if you mouse over the red bar at the bottom of the video and where it's showing like the video clip of where it's at, it's like, okay, I can tell they're still not at the relevant part yet, or you can kind of figure out most of the time where you can skip to the part where they're actually the part that's pertinent that you want. But sometimes you do just have to sit down and watch it.
Yeah. And so just as a clarification, when we're saying, you know, you got to find the pertinent part of it, it's not necessarily that the rest of that is crap. It's just not the part you're looking for. Somebody else might be really interested in it. You know, it's kind of like watching sports. Like some people just want to see the touchdown passes and some people want to see the really good running plays where the offensive line had a great scheme drawn up to spring the back for a 30-yard gain. It's just they started at their own 10, so who cares? They're nowhere near the end zone. You know,
exactly.
What is it you're interested in? And that's kind of, you know, that's sort of what I'm skipping around to. And that's, I think, the difference between like a newscast versus a talk show. And I think that's so.
Yeah.
Hey, and you maybe try throwing Gary's show on at 1.5 speed on your commute. See if you can get it into your commute.
I'd be afraid that he would start clipping the counters all wild. So maybe not.
Just to mess with you.
I did pull up the folder because I was curious. It's 84 tabs is what I'm up to at the moment.
You're insane.
Yes. Yeah. Well, even I don't pull up the bunch of tabs once. I just go through like one website at a time.
Yeah. The fact that I'm insane is not really breaking news.
No. I don't think any of us are surprised by that.
Yeah. Ian, for some of the other content creators and some of the other people that do what you and I do and you know, and Mo and Gary and whoever, who are some of the ones you enjoy sort of checking out and where you find good news or good perspectives. Spread a little love around. Who are some of the other ones you enjoy?
Boy, I didn't bring my right machine to open up all my different follows. So I got to give kudos to some of the publishers first. I mean, GMT does an awesome job of sending out their information, Gene's monthly updates. But just every week they have something from a different designer or developer talking about their one of their games that's coming up, or even, you know, so you see, oh, we did, here's an action, the next step in the development process, keeps it in the front of your mind, keeps it fresh. They oftentimes are nice and graphics heavy, so, you know, the eye candy catches you. MMP does a decent job. I'll say I always keep an eye out for Revolution and Worthington. Worthington is up on the net, the web, Twitter. Revolution doesn't have a Twitter presence. They have a very simple website, but it's actually decent still to go to. And the funny thing about something like Revolution is there's enough other people out there who watch it. If you start watching some of your fellow wargamers, they're going to talk about it, and you'll catch on pretty quick. You almost don't have to wait for the update to come to you in the email, because somebody is going to have seen it and passed it around. Other news, it sort of gets on the professional side. You already mentioned Pax Sims, Rex Brennan. What GUWS is doing is just awesome. Looking at some of the different, like you said, the different war colleges and seeing how they mix war games in, having a simple search in your news feed for war game spelled both ways, with and without a space. Sometimes you'll be surprised what can come up. These days, it's also with wargaming crossing over into board games, you know, the Waros and stuff. You got to keep an eye on that space, too. I was just reading an excellent article tonight by Patrick Braille about depicting slavery, teaching slavery in the classroom using board games.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of lessons there, a lot of thoughts there that wargamers probably should be paying attention to also. I'll see, Brent, if I can get you that link later. Maybe you can link it.
No, that's great.
But so you got that whole other side of these people who are designers, creators, sitting adjacent to the hobby. Really, those are the ones that you wanna see. A lot of good designers out there, and because designers are not always house designers, they tend to spread their wealth pretty wide. So somebody like Thompson, you know, Undaunted Series, he works for a couple of different publishers. But if you follow him, you're gonna get tied into a lot of different other games and other upcoming titles out there.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'll leave it at that for the moment.
There are a couple of designers that, like Ty Bomba, works with like five different publishers. He's doing almost all war game stuff. You mentioned some of the Wiros, the sort of war themed Euros, but there are non-traditional
not weirdos.
They are a little weird, but we're all kind of a little weird. You mentioned there are some non-traditional publishers that do things that are unmistakably war games that I'm not necessarily tracking those publishers, just because there's too many things they do that aren't in our wheelhouse, that the juice isn't worth the squeeze for hitting those sites on a regular basis. So even though Days of Wonder has been publishing Memoir 44 forever and has lots of different expansions around that, I'm not tracking the Days of Wonder website on a regular basis, just on the off chance that twice a year something from Memoir 44 is going to be released. The folks that do Heroes of Normandy, I think it was Simon, but I don't remember that for sure. Valley Games had a World War I war game at one point, you know, 8-9 years ago, but have never done anything with it since. I'm not tracking Hasbro to see the two Axis and Allies releases that they come out with and talk about throughout the year, especially not when one of them is Axis and Allies and Zombies. I'm not. There's other stuff I'm chasing around.
You bring up a great point there, and I'll bet you that Sam in the 4X arena probably has a similar experiences, is that there is a lot of sites out there that are not a publisher, and not even a designer, but they are just, for lack of a better phrase, fandom sites. I mean, you said you know, Days of Wonder Memoir 44, but go over to Command and Colors with the commandandcolors.net. Yeah. There's a whole fan site that is nothing but Commands and Colors and Memoir 44. I mean, if I want to play Memoir 44 game with my boys, I go over there and I pull down a scenario. So, yeah. Panzer Pusher for Jim Day's Panzer from GMT Games and his previous iterations and everything. Lee Brimacombe Wood has his air battles. There's I'm sure Sam in the 4X arena, there's probably somebody out there who just has some sort of 4X fan site that you can go there and get all the information, new and old.
Civ Fanatics was the one I used to always hit for the Civ series.
Yeah. Well, like I said, that's kind of what Explorminate has become. They kind of took over after the Space Sector website. Those guys transitioned into becoming the game developers themselves. But yeah, so there was Space Sector and now Explorminate. Yeah, I mean, yeah, fan sites, I think, have always been kind of probably been the big source of news and information for 4X games for years.
There's a really big Panzer Grenadier community out there that has a particular site that they're pretty prominent on, that there's new stuff all the time. There are two really big fan sites keeping alive the Assault series with a lot of not just scenario updates, but a lot of counter updates and some rules updates, as well as the Panzer Blitz series. And so they've taken the Panzer Blitz, Panzer Leader rules series into Vietnam and into even Europe in the Cold War with rules variants, scenario variants, all kinds of maps, counter updates, whatever. So yeah, exactly what you're talking about, Ian. There's a lot of game support as well as news for the newer stuff coming.
As Armchair Dragoons continue the seventh season of Mentioned in Dispatches, we need to take a moment to thank those Patreon supporters who pledged at the regimental patron level. So a special thank you to Patrick Mullen, Hethwill Wargames, Steelgrave, Mike Quigley, Staggerwing, Robert, Joseph Knoll, Treb Curry, Kevin Bertram, and Patrick Garrity for their support of Armchair Dragoons and helping us bring you the best wargaming content on the web. You can join our Patreon supporters at patreon.com/armchairdragoons.
Sam, hasn't Explorminate threatened to shut down like four different times now? Do they just keep changing owners, or do they say, hey, we're closing up shop, and everybody screams, no, no, don't do it. And so they, okay, fine, we'll stick around a little longer.
It's Rob. He's the owner of the website and the one who founded it. And He's gone through a few things where there's been times where he's kind of the only one doing anything, and
I have no idea what that's like at all.
No, yeah, I was gonna say what you're totally unfamiliar with. I'm not gonna say I won't. There's more I could say, but I won't because I don't. Yeah. I'm not gonna create drama, but it's one of those things.
Create unnecessary drama.
Yeah, no, it's one of those. At this point, I think he's finally realized, like, even if he's kind of out of action for the time being, like, the community will continue on in his absence for the time being. So, as it is, he's now back from he was kind of busy with a house move, and he was recuperating from an injury he sustained last year and whatnot. So it sounds like the site will probably become a little bit more active again, but. You know, it's in the meantime, it remains a resource, and especially, I guess, especially the Discord community. You know, we have news coming in that there's some dedicated news feed channels that the publishers will drop information on the games all the time. And
oh, that's handy.
Yeah. Yep. And, you know, and like I said, and then the regular community members will say, hey, I just came across this game here, and they'll drop a link to the Steam page or the, you know, the itch.io page or whatever it is if it's a game that's really early in development, which is another website that I found some games. I mean, there for all the games that I talk about in the forums, for every game I talk about in the forums, there's like two or three more that I've been following for years I don't even talk about yet because it's still so early in development that it's like I'm just gonna wait.
Yeah. It's just an idea. It's not even really a game yet.
Right. Yeah. It's still very much in its formative stages.
Ian, when you're hunting around for some news, how much of it are you looking for, hey, this is coming up, versus how much of it are you looking for, this is more information about an existing game that's already there? How much of it is, hey, this is available and on sale, versus this will be available at some point in the future? What are the kinds of things that you're chasing around there that most interest you?
Well, I'm going to start by looking at sort of the what's coming up. You know, what's out there on the horizon? Show me something interesting. At that point, then I may start sort of tracking it and see if it's getting close. Is somebody taking it to a Kickstarter? Is it going to go to a pre-order? Take a deeper look at that. And then after that point, especially if I've committed to it, or even if I haven't committed to it, if it's still one of those games that sort of is on my radar, I'll sit there and I'll start trying to follow it. Mm-hmm. And that becomes almost the hardest part is just the following it, because there's always that initial burst of publicity, and maybe there's the Kickstarter campaign, and then it drops into that giant chasm in between the end of Kickstarter and when it comes out in publication. And if you're not a backer, you may not be getting insight into what's going on with it. So sometimes even, I mean, heck, I'll just back it at the $1 level just because it gives me access. So if it goes to, hey, we're almost out and we're going to open it up to some extra folks, then maybe I can jump in.
Yep.
But I found it actually, I find that the news segment and tracking information actually to be quite fragmented. I mean, you really have to look at your publisher. You got to look at the designer and you got to try to follow them, identify who they are and figure out how to keep track on them. God bless Consim World and the CSW, the new social media.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even know what it's called. Consim World Social.
Yeah, sure. Go with that.
I can't filter through that. It's just there's too much other stuff going on that I just can't. I don't have the time.
Yeah.
As much as I love the wargaming, I probably spend maybe 4 minutes a day on my Twitter. I try to put some time in on my website to write some stuff, but there's a Mrs. Rocky Mountain Navy here. She has a, you know, certain requirements too that I am must fulfill within this house, and wargaming not high on her priority list.
Yeah, yeah, no kidding.
So I try to find where I can, but I tell you what, it's challenging. It's challenging. I really enjoy finding that new designer with that new game out there, especially if it almost always starts with word of mouth.
Yeah.
Somebody sits there and says, hey, I got this buddy, or hey, somebody sent me that I was playtesting something, and you start getting hints and inklings of it. And maybe you find your way to that author, to that one little page that they have, and you go like, wow, this is great. And you start following it. Then that becomes folks like us who have to decide, are we going to try to amplify that voice too? You know, help them give a break. I love the small designers. I love the folks that are out there trying to get started and get going. The big established ones, you're big and established.
Yeah.
Okay. I have certain expectations of you, yeah. But the smaller ones, I would love. I mean, for myself, John Compton over at Canvas Temple Publishing, he's horrible at communications. He's a busy guy, but his website doesn't really tell much about stuff. But when I find out something from him, I'm going to support him because I like what he does. I just wish he told more people what he does.
Folks that have been around the Dragoons a while know some of my background. My background is in communication and journalism and the ad PR world. My master's is in journalism, but it's integrated communication, which is sort of that cross-platform ad PR marketing world, not just straight journalism. And I've worked in the comm field off and on. I've taught in the comm field off and on over the years. I'm fully aware that the vast majority of wargame publishers out there are shoestring operations that are by and large second jobs for a lot of people. And I respect the hell out of these guys. I say guys and gals, whoever, that are taking the plunge to contribute to the hobby as a whole on top of everything else going on in their lives. Like, that's great. I love the motivation and enthusiasm there. But a lot of them, hey, I've got a great idea for a game. Wouldn't it be fun to publish this? And not a whole lot of thought around the rest of the business practice beyond just that. And I'm speaking to this a little bit as a guy that tried to be my own publisher for a while. There's one thing a lot of people don't realize is just how much of the shipping business you're actually in when you are a small publisher. You are a lot more in the shipping business than you are just in the publishing business. I promise you. But that communication piece is an important one that a lot of people let fall through, because like every other piece of a business, it needs some kind of plan. And it doesn't mean you've got to be spitting out daily content or anything, but that, you know, what is the plan? How frequently are you going to update people? What are the kinds of things you're going to tell them? Through what channels are you going to send that information out? How is that going to get to people? And what is it you're going to share? And why are you sharing it? What is it you're hoping to do? Are you just keeping yourself in people's minds for awareness? Is there an action you want them to take? Is this just, you know, trying to draw attention to other things you're working on? Like, what is it you're trying to communicate, and why and how? And to whom? And those things shouldn't be as slapdash as they frequently are in our industry. But I understand why they are, because that's not a core competency for a lot of these folks. They've got a lot of other things they're good at. So it's not a surprise that it's not a core competency. But take a little time and, you know, at least develop a plan, and then, you know, execute and adjust as needed. So that's, you know, the nickel's worth of advice that I would give as a dude who spent a lot of time studying and teaching and developing that for other people in other places. So, Sam, who are some people you've seen with good comms versus less good comms? Maybe don't pick on people with bad comms, unless you want to. Like, go ahead, make fun of people. But who are some people you've seen with some good comms out there?
I mean, obviously they're a bigger company, but I mean, Paradox is consistently pretty good with, you know, engaging with their community and keeping them informed with where they're at and, you know, developing their games and whatnot. Stardock.
Slytherin's got their weekly Slytherin tea time thing, don't they?
Yes. they're more middling. They're kind of, okay. they can be, I know they have the reasons, but they can be strangely parsimonious with their information sometimes about their games and keeping their cards close to their chest about things. It's like, I think they're trying to avoid overhype and disappointment by the community in doing that. I think that's the motivation, but I still think they're hurting themselves more than they're helping by withholding that.
That's fair. So,
yeah. It's like once a game is out or is about to be released, then they'll tell you all that they can and have, but it's like until that moment, it's like just dribbles and that's kind of it. So like I said, they're kind of in the middle there.
Once something's ready to launch, they do a really good job of supporting the content community also.
Yes. Yes.
Because I'll get multiple emails around the launch for the new games when they're ready to go. Hey, we got a new review code. Hey, we've got a screenshot pack. Hey, we can help set up an interview with somebody. And the biggest issue I run into is I'm just out of people to help fill that gap. And it's more than just I can do by myself.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I just wish they were better at getting the word out about their games that are coming up. Mm-hmm. I do feel that is one of their weaknesses.
Ian, you mentioned that you're having to actually go actively seek out and track down a lot of this stuff from different places. I know there have been at least three attempts in the tabletop community as a whole, not just the wargaming world, to start up some sort of newswire similar to like the different PR newswires that exist in other professional communities, just to get a place where the press, where you can go find all the press releases, right? A central clearinghouse of what the company wants to tell you. Never mind going out and actually like digging for scoops somewhere, but just a place to find all the press releases. There's been three different attempts to start them and they've all failed for various reasons. And I think anybody that cracks the code on how to get that up and running, business genius right there, because they've actually been able to sustain something that three other attempts have failed at. But I think that would go at least partway towards some of the hassle you've described of where do you find this stuff? And if there was a central PR clearinghouse like that, then the brand new, like when Catastrophe Games starts up, when Tim fires up that company, you know, 2 years ago or whatever it was, there's a place to make that announcement and people can find out that Catastrophe Games exists and, oh, hey, here's where to go to get this information. It's not word of mouth through a Kickstarter kind of thing. So it'd be cool if somebody could pull that off.
But I think that's the way our community is.
Oh, yeah.
I think that's where our community is, though. We don't have a central clearing. We are still, in many ways, the war game community, especially the commercial war game community, is a cottage industry. Mm-hmm. And we still very much depend upon word of mouth, and it's not where you go, but who you know to connect to create those networks and such. I would think right now, Sam even alluded to it about like production schedules and stuff. If I was a war game company or any company right now, the last thing I want to publicize, actually, it's the thing I want to know the most, and it's the thing the companies want to tell me the least, is when's the game coming.
Right.
Because they don't know. And they don't want to build false expectations. You said it yourself there, Sam. You know, they don't want to build up false expectations and get people all worked up and then say, oh, by the way, yeah, it's stuck on the dock for another 2 months. Because a lot of what war games do is a lot of them will thrive in the first release. And that's going to be where that's where the company makes their money. So they got to hit it. And they got to hit it strong at once, and they can't. I mean, a lot of these companies are struggling right now because they're sitting here with, you know, when's my game coming? When do I drop the hype? When do I push out the how to play videos? When do I do all that? And that's also what I want to know because I you know, sorry guys, full disclosure here, I do not own the checkbook in the house, and right. It's hard to explain. The other day I had. In the span of like 3 days, I had a pre-order from GMT hit, as their P500 is working off. There was multiple games in that. I had a Kickstarter that funded, and I was doing a local auction. So I was buying something there. So I had like five games in 3 days and none of them small dollar values. And you know, Mrs. Spocker and they was like, what are you doing? Can't you plan this better? It's like, well, no, I can't. But I sure need to. So, you know, it's hard. So I want to know when I'm getting my game. That's the number one thing I want to find out. And then the number two thing is those companies better be selling me on that, what's coming next, because they want me to be anxious to get that game.
Right.
Exactly.
Yeah. And I do imagine, I have to believe it's more difficult for the tabletop war games than the computer war games, because wouldn't it?
So yeah, talking well,
about, I would think so. I mean, one's physical,
having a purely physical product.
Physical.
Yeah, shipping for digital games tends to be a little easier to manage.
Yeah. So well, even if you just ship, even for those when you're just shipping the disc in a case, like Slytherin Matrix still do for those people who want a physical copy. That's still easier than shipping out a box with a board and pieces and cards.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, absolutely. I think there are some companies, yeah, Ian, you mentioned it, there's some companies that are really good about communicating what's going on. There are some of them that aren't. It's you can tell who's got a plan and who's got a bit of a routine in place and who doesn't. Some of it is based on who has a workforce to do those things, or at a minimum has designated a primary person to handle it. Even if that's not their only job, they have a specific person whose job includes that. There are others where it's a two-man shop and they're doing literally everything, and that it shows because their attention. And I think most gamers would say, if you've only got X amount of hours to focus on getting things done, I would rather you complete the game and get it shipped to me than you take time away from that to tell me about what's not happening.
Right.
I think that's probably fair for most gamers. So I will say, just as a side note, you know, we've talked about some things people don't do great. One website, whether you like Avalanche Press or not for the games, the daily content that they have on their website, they've got some fun articles on their website. They do a good job of giving you digestible, bite-sized snippets of the historical background of the things in their games. And they will take things and break it. Part of it is to maintain the daily rhythm of what they do. but it does help keep things digestible. But they'll take an extended piece of something and they'll break it up into four or five parts over the course of 2 or 3 weeks. They just released a thing for Panzer Grenadier about river battleships, where it's sort of floating artillery basically on the rivers in World War II. And they broke up, I don't know, probably 6 or 8 different articles over the course of the past year, helping build some interest in that game. I'm not a big Panzer Grenadier player, so it wasn't anything I was likely to buy. Sorry, Mike, I know you'd rather me spend the money on it, but they did a really good job of giving you a lot of the historical information about where the content of the game came from in history and where it ties back into in the history. One of the things that Mike did an excellent job of, and absolute props to him, the Black Panthers Panzer Grenadier release that he just recently did about the African-American units in World War II. The game is great. The historical information in the game is cool. He published a dozen or more very well-researched, very detailed, very well-documented and cited articles about the unit and its history and its experiences. And look, the dude's got a PhD in history. Like, he knows how to do this. You know, this is not just some fly by night something. He knows what he's doing when he's digging into that research. And they were a blast to read. They really were great reading. Whether you're a fan of the games or not, the historical content there is pretty good and worth checking out multiple times a week just to see what's new that they're talking about. It's not always news in terms of like something actionable, but it's a good read. I'll definitely say that.
It's one thing I've always enjoyed about the Creative Assembly with their Total War series. We'll talk about when they're working on an upcoming game, they'll occasionally drop an article that doesn't necessarily have a direct bearing on the progress of the game that they're working on, but it's related content about, you know, talking about, you know, this character from the that time period who, and, you know, and what they did at this, you know, at that particular junction in history. And it's, you know, I mean, and that in turn has often spurred me to, you know, go look that person up and, or, you know, check out a book in the library and read and find out more about them.
Yeah, absolutely. One of the things that I try to look for, and it, Sam, you and I have talked about this a little bit when you started contributing to the 4X section in Tuesday Newsday, just to circle back around to that. One of the things that I'm real big on in what we include in Tuesday Newsday, and I'd mentioned this in a note in one of the weekly articles, I'm real big on actionable news items. Give me something that I can do. And that's one thing that does frustrate me about some of the other news aggregators out there. There are a couple of sites that do a really good job of publishing a lot of information about the tabletop gaming space, especially in the minis space. Things like Malifaux and Iron Kingdoms and Warhammer and some of those other mini skirmish games. Look, they're all great games. They're adjacent to some of the things we do. They're not our core audience, but some of our audience does enjoy playing some of those things as well. And they're cool games. They're just not in the core of what we're targeting. But there are some news aggregators out there that if you go through their list of news articles, it's so-and-so announces next week's preview. Big whoop. Like, I don't care at that. Like, there's nothing I can do. Like, it is cool for some audience members to go look and go see. And to your point, like, that helps build some enthusiasm for things as they're coming in the absence of the actual product. But if I'm aggregating news content for my audience across, you know, 84 different tabs, plus whatever else I've found during the week coming in, plus the newsletters that are coming in to me through email, I'm not spending any time on, hey, tune in next week to see the preview of something you can't buy until March. Like, that doesn't do anybody any good. I want people to be able to click buttons and spend money with publishers. You know, I want people to be able to go pledge a Kickstarter. And
that's the sort of thing that's the sort of thing you mentioned in the forums, not in the Tuesday Newsday.
Yeah. Yeah. That's so part of what people are gonna see in what we're publishing each week is stuff you can go. Now that, look, I've got the here are things in the wargaming industry. And so, like, we talked about the fact that Paizo's employees were recognized as a union. That's a big deal in the gaming business. as an industry piece of news. That's not necessarily something the audience can do anything with, but that's kind of a big deal. But for instance, this week we announced that Slytherin and Matrix have a tournament coming up for, I think it's Great War Commander. I don't remember for sure. One of their games, they got a tournament starting on like the 22nd of November. And so we, you know, that's a new snippet somebody can do something with. Let's go play in this tournament. Those are the kinds of things that I care about. Not, hey, this thing is making progress and might hit Kickstarter by June. In June, I will put a thing in there that says, hey, this is on Kickstarter, go pledge.
Right.
That's what I'm more interested in. So, hey, Ian, what do you think? Am I way off base here? Or?
So, I mean, you are trying to provide a service for the community. God bless you. And yes, you're trying to get people to go and get excited and get something out of it. Hey, I'm going to read this and I can do an immediate action. Me, I'm more not looking as a service for others. I'm looking at it as a service for myself. So for me, I do want to see that preview. I do want to see what's coming up because I got to decide if I'm going to be buying it or if I'm just going to skip by it or if I want to be excited or not. It's just a different perspective. I'll just say I think that much like the rest of the world, the new age media is changing how we do things. And I'm an old enough grognard that I remember that I had to wait. You know, sign up for the newsletter that was sent out like three times a year from the publisher, and that's all the information you got. And if you were lucky, you signed up with more than one publisher, and you got more than your favorite. If you're really lucky, you subscribe to a magazine, and you got three issues a year where you got all your news coming from. And nowadays, you know, there is so much news out there, and it's not being pushed to you anymore. Now it's pull, and I can customize my pool. You're still pushing it through the website because you're one of the places that I pull from. but it's a whole different world of how I want to pull my information in. And there's a lot of ways to do it. Some of it's old school, some of it's new school. I think if there's one thing we want to tell, the rest of the community is that if you're a publisher, push, get stuff out there. If you're a content creator, push, get it out there. If you're a designer, push, get it out there. You may not be a great communications major, but you got to figure out a way. There's so much content being pushed that you got to figure out a way how to package yourself to make you stand out. Sometimes you stand out by being quite simple. Sometimes you stand out by being extremely, lots of bling, but you still got to figure it out and get your information out there and push. Some people go like, well, I'm pushing, but nobody's listening. Well, yeah, there's people listening out there, and it's hard to do those metrics. If you're selling games, people are listening.
Yeah. Well, and the issue of metrics is a challenging one. And again, putting on my academic background here, the issue of metrics is a challenging one because what is it you're trying to measure? Like, what actually matters to you? Is it game sales? Is it chatter about your games? Is it people sharing your content? Whatever nebulous versions of the word engagement we're trying to use this week, like, what is it you're trying to accomplish? And that's figure out a smart metric on that. And those are not always easy to define. That's why they've got people that spend their lives working on PhDs around that kind of content. It's tough. I'm not going to pretend otherwise. But
to say, hey, there's only one metric.
Yeah, say
that is, did you listen to the Armchair Dragoons mentioned in Dispatch's podcast? That is the only metric.
By that metric, the Charlie's episode seems to be doing fairly well, but I think having Gary pimp it on his broadcast definitely helped that quite a bit. I'll say, as a dude that hits 80 odd tabs at least once a week looking for information, publishers, let me throw this out there. There are two things that will make a huge, huge difference on your website for folks that are coming there looking for information. And some of y'all do this really well, and some of y'all suck at it. And I'm not going to call out who's who. Go look at your own website and make your own decision. You should have two things on your website that are instantly easily sortable for your audience. You need your entire catalog sortable from newest to oldest. I should be able to go hit your product, your list of products, and ideally your entire list of products somewhere, and be able to sort newest to oldest so that I can see the most recent thing you've got for sale right up there on top. Now, that doesn't mean that that's got to be the only way in which you present your content. You can do feature content. You can do sale content. You can do price low to high. Look, it's all database driven stuff. There is no reason you shouldn't have a sort function that says, show me the newest to the oldest releases. No reason at all not to have that. So that way, with me as a customer or me as a news guy trying to help share your company's information, I can go hit the site and go instantly see right away, hey, there's something new here to talk about. The other thing is, if you've got a news feed, and you should, not everybody does, you should have a news feed that is also sortable, newest to oldest, as well as whatever other categories you want to put on there. Again, no reason not to sort from new to old in the news area for, hey, we've got this new Kickstarter, we just signed a new designer, we've got this new thing coming out, this has been delayed because the boat stuck off Long Beach, whatever it is. Those two things you gotta have. And there's, go take a look at your sites. Some of you are doing a really good job of this. Some of y'all suck at it, because I've got to click through like 7 different places just to find out if you've got a new release this month. And there's no reason I should have to do that as a news guy or as a customer to find out if you've got something new. I'll throw out a couple of kudos, a couple of love letters here. Hollenspiel has a great way to go hit their product catalog, sort new to old, and I can instantly see that Nicaea was released this week and that, you know, Westward Rails was released last week. That one's very easy to see. GMT, the games aren't always as easily sortable, but the news down in the bottom left corner of their homepage, the most recent GMT Insider articles are always stacked up new to old right there. I can always go find new GMT news right away. It's a very easy place to find it. I'm not saying you got to rip off either one of them's website layouts. There's other really good website layouts you can also take a look at. But those, there's, you know, again, no reason I shouldn't be able to hit your site, find the catalog, sort new to old, and instantly see what's new from your company. You got to do that. You just absolutely have. Don't make me have to work to give you money for your new stuff. That's a sure way to make it hard. Don't make it hard for people to throw money at you. I mean, really. Come on, work with us here. Make it easy for us to spend money. Sam, what do you think? Wrap us up here a little bit on some war game news. What's out there that's well done that you do like from somebody? Let's go out on a high note and give some kudos to people.
Oh, goodness.
put me on this. Like, we shouldn't be straining to say nice things about people. The fact that we sometimes have to, publishers, that's a hint for y'all.
Yeah.
Hey. No. Well, maybe what's a forum where you tend to find some good news that you are able to find some scoops and happily share elsewhere?
Well, as far as wargaming news, I was going to say the Slytherin Matrix forums, the Matrix forums in particular is actually a pretty good place for it.
In the individual game sections of the Matrix forum, I will agree with you. In the general discussion area of the Matrix forum, yeah.
I'm not going to disagree.
There's a significant amount of that population that doesn't even know who Charles S. Roberts is to know who the awards are named after, much less the fact that Slytherin won one, of, you know, Matrix won one of them this year. So
Right. So of course, not to suck. I mean, obviously I like how we do it at the Armchair Dragoons, like the layout for Tuesday Newsday. It's very simple, it's very straightforward. It's the template you use, it works very well.
You're kissing up, dude. I mean, don't stop, but you know.
I don't know, like, I mean, back in the day, of course, Wargamer did a decent job, but that's been forever ago.
Yeah, that was four owners ago.
Yeah.
At this point, that was four owners ago. So, Ian, what do you got? Some final thoughts on wargaming news here. Some advice for the audience, you know, some good secret they should pay attention to, or something for the publishers.
So I think that the way I do it is a very carefully curated Twitter feed. I keep the politics out of it. When I build my Twitter feed, if I'm following you, I'm putting you into my timeline so I can see right away what's coming up. Sometimes I will not put you in my timeline, my follow, I'll build a list to the side. And that doesn't mean I don't like you. It just means that maybe you speak a little bit too much about your beloved Miami Dolphins and I don't want it polluting my timeline. But I still want to hear what you got to say. So I move it a little bit to the side, which I think is what the big companies that do it well, GMT, I'll give them the kudos. They deserve it. A lot of folks need to look at them. I think folks, what I look for is really what GMT's telling me. Hey, what's coming up? What have I got in the pipeline? What's already the pipeline? Where is it at? What's going on? If there's one thing that I think the war game industry is missing when it comes to news, one of my favorite podcasts is Board Games Insider, which is Inasi from Portal Games and Stephen Bonacore, formerly of Stronghold Games. Mm-hmm. And even though it started off in some ways as sort of a shill for each of their two companies and such, Steve's retired now. They talk a lot about the business of board gaming. They've done some great stuff about deep dives about shipping, about publishing, about printing and that sort of stuff. I really wish somebody in the war game world, some folks out there would do that. For a while, Uwe Eichert of Academy Games was doing some video casts, and he had some great video casts about that. I still think his one talking about printing map boards is still epic. What goes into that? There's a lot of good stuff that I wish we got that sort of news because that helps me understand much better when these publishers say, hey, you know, we had to reject an entire print run and we're going to be set back by 2 months. And it's like, dude, you did the print run. I mean, what was wrong? You just hit send again. But no, there's a lot more that goes into that, but we never hear that. And mm-hmm. and I know that some folks, Gene hints around it a little bit in the GMT notes. A lot of other companies are very much, Jamie Stegmaier in the board game world is very much open up about his stuff. Steve Jackson, actually, they published their numbers. I wish we had more of that news because that would help me understand more about these companies. But maybe we're too small. Maybe that's, you know, the folks are sitting there and they don't want to talk about that because then we see just how much of a razor's edge they live on.
Yeah.
And give them grief over it.
When I did the article back in the summer about the global shipping crisis and how it was affecting wargaming and tabletop gaming, you know, I sent out the survey to a whole bunch of people in the game industry. And even though it was 100% anonymous, I still had two war game publishers email me back and say, hey, we really appreciate you digging into this. We appreciate you looking into it. We're choosing not to respond to the survey, even with it being anonymous, because our stated policy is that we don't discuss those business decisions. And that's fine. And I'm going to leave them anonymous so that people aren't necessarily looking at the data that we had to say, oh, well, that company's not in it, therefore it doesn't mean anything, or
it invalidates the data or whatever.
Maybe that company is in there. Like I'm not going to compromise the anonymity that I told them I was granting them as a part of it. But I did appreciate them at least replying and saying, hey, thanks for doing this. We're not replying, and here's why. Like, this is a company policy for us. And that's cool. Like, I appreciate the honesty about that. It may be that some companies are hesitant to talk about it because if you're going to talk about this, well, then what else are people going to expect you to talk about? And just how far are you going to hike up your skirt necessarily? And they may not be real comfortable doing that in some cases. Which I get, like I can understand it, even if I may not agree with it necessarily, I can understand it. And that may be where some of that reticence is coming from, good, bad, or otherwise. So, but you're right. I think that would be some interesting content if we could get it from people. That said, I would settle for them giving us a catalog that I could sort new to old.
Like, and a production schedule.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's start small, guys. Let's start with the easy stuff before we get into the tough stuff. But the easy stuff, give me a catalog that I can sort new to old. It's not hard. It's all database driven stuff. Set your storefront to be able to sort new to old. It's easy, right? Holland Spiel's a two-woman show. They figured it out. You guys can do it. So Canvas Temple's a one-man show. I mean, it's John's got his kids helping out a little bit, but Canvas Temple can do it. Like, everybody should be able to do this. It's not saying John's not a smart guy or anything, but it's a one-man show. The rest of y'all can figure this out. So cool. Guys, really appreciate y'all taking a little bit of time to share some thoughts on war game news here and what we can find, where we can find it, how we can find it, how we go about doing it. I think there's certainly some room for improvement across the industry with the things the companies put out, with the way in which content creators cover it and report on it and talk about it. I think wargaming has a particularly unique challenge in that our content tends to stick around for our the product of our industry tends to stick around for a while and maintain its fandom for a long time. You will still find people writing about and talking about games from 20, 30, 40, 50 years ago, like it's nothing, like it's still new to you. And it may be
Twilight.
Twilight and Blue. But I mean, look, Ian, you were part of it. You were one of two articles that we ran on the Central Front series from S&T Magazine from 1980. You know, they were well-respected games of their time. They are dated. We all know that. We ran not one but two articles from two different writers about magazine games from 45, 50 years ago, 40 years ago. That's kind of cool.
You're
that's
making me feel sort of old.
Yeah, it means we're old. Yes, got it. But that does add a slight challenge to our industry a little bit in the way in which we cover some things, and that's okay. Like, we'll figure out how to adapt and move on, but let's I think we've all got some room to for improvement. We got to figure out best ways to do that. So to that end, audience, please feel free to chime in the comments down below this episode or hop into our forums. Talk to us some about things that people do well, things that people could definitely improve on. Telling us we're doing something well. Yeah, it's nice to hear. Got it. Thanks for sucking up, Sam. I appreciate it. But
anytime.
but let's tell us where we can improve. Like, how can we better serve you as the audience, both the publishers and the content creators? What can we do better for you? So really want to hear that. And as always, thanks for joining us on Mentioned in Dispatches. We've only got a couple episodes left in this season before we take our break for the holidays. So we do appreciate all y'all stopping by here, and thanks a lot for doing it. And we hope everybody's looking forward to a great holiday season of spending a lot of money with war game publishers so we can keep them afloat and keep them around for as long as possible. So thanks, everybody, and we'll talk to you on another episode of Mentioned in Dispatches down the line.